Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday afternoon this week. We have a very special guest. She's not really a guest. She's part of our family. We have a family member coming back. First, let me introduce, joining us from New York. Oh, no, you're not in New York City. You were in New York City
yesterday, Bontemps. I was.
You're now in Philadelphia.
I am, where I'll be for the playoffs with the Sixers, as long as they're in them.
And your super secret plan to get across the border. Are we going to reveal that at some point? I don't know if we're going to do that.
I'm going to Toronto. You have a plan. So I'm going, I'm covering the whole series.
That's right. And you have a plan to get across the border that is non-traditional. Joining us from Dallas, where he's on Luka Doncic calf watch, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
And our special family member coming back to us, Jackie McMullen. We're so happy to have you. And bringing on Jackie is our innovation of the week. And that's brought to you by CarMax. Shop online and on the lot with home delivery in select markets. Welcome back to the Hoop Collective.
Thank you. It's so nice to see everybody. I haven't seen any of you. I guess Tim Bontemps, I've seen you in person, but the rest of you, I still have not seen you.
In a minute.
Way too long. So Tim, I have to ask you, like, why do you have to sneak over the border? Are you not vaccinated? May I ask why?
No, I'm going to and from Toronto. I am fully vaccinated, but you can, you don't have to test to come into the States if you drive out of the country. So that's how I'm going to be going in and out.
And watch just up. Because he doesn't, we don't want him to get test positive and then be stuck there for days, weeks on end.
Listen, if you don't want them to test positive, just give them an IQ test.
Oh, man. Here we go.
Here we go.
Whitey Bulger. There's a famous Whitey Bulger story about going into Canada. So he was a big Bruins fan. Of course, he was on the lam, the most wanted fugitive, I think the most wanted in America at the time. And the Bruins were in the finals playing the Vancouver Canucks. And Whitey was on the lam in California. But he really wanted to see this game. So he and his girlfriend put on a disguise, drove across the border, watched the Bruins win the Stanley Cup. This is a true story, and drove back. So I wish I knew what Whitey's disguise was, Tim, because maybe we could. Of course, Whitey's gone now, as we know.
That is
Wouldn't it be amazing if Instagram was around back then, Jackie, and he did a selfie?
Because I covered those playoffs, believe it or not. I did. I was there for the, I guess I was there for ESPN Boston. I can't even remember, but I was there. And I was with ESPN Boston. My pal Joey McDonald bought a case of beer. And I'm like, what are we going to be doing with that? You know, so they win. We have a beer. We write. We have a beer. We start to walk out. And there's a riot. Remember? Because they had the
after
the Canucks lost. So we're going to walk out. And the cops go, oh, no. Back inside you go. So I
got a case of beer.
We have a case of beer. Unfortunately, the problem was Barry Melrose and Steve Levy were with us, so we didn't get to drink that much.
That's right.
It was a fun memory for me. Anyway.
So, Jackie, the reason you've come back is to tell us about your project that was like a book. It's a podcast project called The Icons Club. It's on the Ringer Podcast Network. It's on the Book of Basketball feed. But Jackie, you've been working on this, no kidding, for years,
almost 2 years.
It just came out last month and the episodes are coming out now. Can you tell us what the Icons Club is?
Well, the whole idea of it, Brian, was that, so all these great icons, every generation, the players get a little more rights. They have a little more power. So how does that happen? So our premise was that there's this Icons Club and only the elite members of the NBA can be in it because they're the only ones that can understand. Like Magic understood what Larry was going through and Larry understood what Magic would, but nobody else did. Wilt and Russell, probably the same kind of thing. So the premise was to find out what did Russ teach Dr. J, who taught Michael Jordan, who taught Kobe. That was the premise. I wish it was as clear at the time I started this all that time ago. That's what the premise turned out to be. And it was fascinating to me. It took so long. It's my fault because I got down the rabbit hole and I couldn't get myself back up with every episode. You found out a new story and that meant contacting a new person. And so I think we interviewed over 50 great NBA players. And we're talking, you know, the greatest of the great
icons.
Right. From you know, from Oscar Robertson and Bob Cousy all the way up to Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and, you know, a whole bunch of guys in between. So,
well, here's all I need to know about Jackie. So she gets very mad, but I call her the legend, and she gets very grumpy about that because she doesn't like to be called that. But you know why Jackie is the legend? Because she opened this podcast with an interview with Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan is all in this podcast, and I can tell you, Michael Jordan wouldn't be doing that for anybody else. He's doing it for Jackie Mack. So that sums up why she's a legend, and this podcast is great. I told her that offline. I've listened through half of it so far, and it's riveting stuff. Like, it's really cool stuff. So definitely go listen to it.
Thank you. The legend is certainly accurate. I don't think she gets mad because you call her the legend. I think she gets mad because you call her. Leave her alone.
That's funny.
You missed this man, great. Jackie.
Jordan was great. Man. Jordan made this whole thing for us, and I told him that right before it came out. I texted him and said, oh, yeah, this was thanks again, because he has so much to offer. And I think I probably caught him at a good time. I don't think he was particularly thrilled with the blowback from The Last Dance and some of the things that came back at him. I think some of it flummoxed him a little bit, to be honest. And, you know, he's pretty introspective these days. I think losing Kobe was a huge blow for him. They really were very good friends, and we really chronicle the amount of time they spent together and the amount of times Kobe called Jordan, sometimes in the middle of the night. And Jordan would, you know, he'd be asking these very specific questions, and Jordan would be talking to him, and they'd lie back down and say, why the hell am I doing this? Why am I giving this kid all my secrets? I've never done this with anybody else. Why am I doing it for this kid? And I think the answer really was that he was in many ways just flattered that Kobe wanted to be him. You know, he strived to be him and then be better than him. And of course, he never quite got to that peak. He got pretty close. And so for me, having Jordan as a thread all the way through, you know, the tough Jordan, the punch Steve Kerr Jordan, all the way to the very soft side at the end of Jordan, giving Kobe his secrets, sharing, you know, crying like a baby at Kobe's funeral, sort of. Mm-hmm. So for me, in a lot of ways, the evolution of the NBA icon was what this was about. But for me, in many ways, it was the evolution of Michael Jordan, to be honest, because he wasn't one of the guys that was sharing information. Dr. J was the first person that said to him, if you ever need anything, call me. And Michael said, thank you, Julius. And then never called him because he thought, nope, I had to do this on my own.
Yeah, that was interesting that he talked about that. Even though he came sort of a half generation behind Bird and Magic, he came into Bird and Magic's NBA. He wasn't interested in getting advice from them. And I can tell you that that's the way LeBron operated too. Mm-hmm. That LeBron didn't want to seek advice from elders. LeBron likes to give out advice, loves to give out advice, asked for or not, but that was the way LeBron was when he came in the league. And then it sounds like Jordan told you the same sort of thing.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Brian, is Michael Jordan went to a young LeBron James and said, just like Dr. J said to him, if you ever need anything, call. And then in our series, Jordan says, and to his credit, he didn't. Jordan gets it. He does. He's not offended by that. In a way, he kind of admires it. But let's not forget that after that horrific series against Dallas in the finals, when we're all wondering, wow, maybe LeBron James is a mirage after all. Where did he go? You know where he went. He went down to see Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah. Well, first he went to the Bahamas and sulked for about 5 days. Jackie, you mentioned the fallout that Jordan after the Last Dance. Were you surprised what how hurt Scottie Pippen was and the outpouring that he had and when he put out his own book after that?
Well, I really like Scottie. You and I worked with him, Brian.
So do I.
Yeah.
I got a chance to know him. You know, I can't say that I know him like people who covered him when he was playing, but right. I spent a lot of time with him.
So I think he reminds me of Shaq in that I think he's pretty sensitive about criticism. Yeah. And I think he forgot. I really do. I think it's easier for Scottie to just move past what happened in that famous game when he wouldn't go in because he was mad at Phil and he didn't get the last shot called for him. And of course, that was highlighted in The Last Dance. And there's no way to spin that positively for Scottie Pippen, right? There just isn't. And so to have to relive that all those years later, when, you know, he's gone on to be a successful man, he had family, he was, you know, was a television personnel. I think that was probably a little bit of a shock to the system in some regards.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, I think that happened to a lot of the guys. I mean, Dennis Rodman, I was around then. I totally forgot the Dennis Rodman, AWOL to Vegas. I had totally forgotten about that, you know, because there were so many crazy things going on with those guys. So I think that's some of where I think there was also, and I don't know this for a fact, this is speculation on my part, because I don't want you guys to get aggregated. No longer my problem, but I still don't want to have you. I think that, you know, there was the idea that Jordan was getting paid. Now, Jordan donated all his money to charity. I think both Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen thought you should have paid us. Again, speculation. You
mean from The Last Dance?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I will say that, you know, Scottie was careful what he said about Michael on air. And he was very careful about whenever comparing Michael to anybody, even though there is really difficult to compare, because the phone would ring. I mean, Scottie would tell me that the phone would ring from Michael. So, you know, you know, but I also remember, you know, people say, oh, I don't know if this is going to, what's going to happen to these two. But I remember the story of Chamberlain and Russell, and how Bill said something speaking to a college, right, Jackie, and
it offended.
I can't remember even what it was, something about Chamberlain not playing through an injury. And
yeah, it was the 69 finals. It was Chamberlain. It was Russell's last game, game seven. He was retiring, and Will got hurt, went to the bench. And everyone was kind of incredulous because he was limping a bit, but they're like, well, when's he going to go back in? And he finally went to the coach, Butch Pamradikoff, and said, I'm ready to go back in. And the coach said, screw you, we're going to go without you. And Russell was very offended by it because he felt like this is my last game. The Lakers were heavily favored in that series. You know,
he was offended that he wouldn't play again. It's a hard methodology for me to get, but you know.
No, listen, it's a different time. People played through injuries, and he made that comment. They didn't speak for a long time, but the ice finally broke, and we covered this in the series.
Yeah, it was great.
The Reebok commercial, Shaq's Reebok commercial. Remember, he knocks on, and Bill Russell says, password, and he says, don't fake the funk on a nasty dunk, right? And he goes in, and who's there waiting for him but Bill Walton, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Will Chamberlain, and Bill Russell all stand there with their hands folded. And Walton told me that it was on that set where Wilt was the kind of the friendly one, the one without the ego, which is interesting, right? Because we always think of him as having an oversized body, game, and ego. He was the one that kind of broke the ice and got that friendship back on track.
Yeah. So I, because of that, like, look, is it, you know, are Ray Allen and KG kind of, are they getting back together? Is that a little
there
bit?
There was some bending of fences at the at both the 75th anniversary thing in Cleveland, okay, and then at the KG jersey retirement. Ray came back. Kevin said he should get his jersey retired. You know, there was just at least some thawing there.
So if I don't know, Jack, you think there's thawing there? Or
well, I do, but I just don't think they were ever really good friends to begin with. And that's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So, you know, Wilt and Russell, again, we're talking about, you're the only one that knows how I feel. Think about them in the 60s, these two huge men who are carrying a league that doesn't make any money, that's never shown on TV. I think their per diem was like $8.50 a day. Okay. And they're taking trains and they have to pack light because they got to walk across a cornfield to get to the hotel in Fort Wayne. I mean, this is a different NBA that we're talking about.
Well, Jackie, okay? the crazy part in there was when you talked about how they would stay at each other's houses too.
Right. Sleep
and
in
stuff.
His bed.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. He slept in, Russ would go down to Philly and sleep in Wilt's bed when they played at Thanksgiving, you know? So there was a connection there that, you know, KG and Ray, when they were teammates, they were brothers. That's how that goes. But, you know, one of the reasons their falling out began in the first place was that when they had events, team events, Ray didn't go. Ray was playing golf with Doc and Danny. And the guys would say, you never show up. And then Ray would have an event and everyone would show up. So, you know, long before Ray left for Miami, there was some things going on there that, and by the way, Ray had every right to be who he wanted to be and do what he wanted to do. I never understood I never thought it was that egregious. They tried to trade Ray Allen before he left as a free.
That's the thing. The thing that's always forgotten is that always he nearly got traded, yeah. And then 6 months later he decided to leave.
Yeah,
and
Ray said, had
what
the right
doing leaving.
Yeah. Right.
So the point is, Russell and Chamberlain were in a feud, ended up mending. I don't know whatever you want to call the Allen KG thing. Champions together, and they're kind of coming, getting past it. And even though Pippen and Jordan are right now at odds, I am hoping and believing that they'll eventually get past it. They're too great not to. But it was unfortunate that Scotty didn't come to the 75th celebration, because I thought that was really, really cool. And I'm jaded and I don't really, you know, get into that kind of stuff. And I thought it was awesome. And, you know, because I know Scotty on a personal level, I was sad that he wasn't there. Anyway, check out the Icons Club. I mean, Jackie just scratch the surface of the kind of stuff that's in there. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, barrel-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. But I do think we should talk about the playoffs, if you don't mind. A couple of series that we're going to get started this weekend that are very fascinating. I think it's a very fascinating year, one of the more fascinating in the 20 years I've covered the NBA. And I want to start with the Celtics and Nets. And Jackie, I want to start with asking you how you see this series, particularly the Celtics going against the grain and just playing to win and saying, okay, we'll play the Nets.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that, in my opinion. I would have set myself up to play the Bulls or the Raptors if I had to. So that was a mistake in my mind. We can all talk about honor and all that, but you know, the Bucks have honor too, but they did the right thing for their franchise. So, that being said, it's interesting to me how the odds makers are favoring the Celtics. It's so funny to me, and I'm not a bettor at all, but I look at the odds and I'm really startled at how, they favor the Celtics, not just over the Nets, but in some sites over everybody. And maybe it's just because, Tim and I, Bontemps and I have watched this team and we've watched it. We've seen the potential and then watched it falter when it really counts. So maybe we're a little jaded. I don't want to speak for you, Tim. Because the one worry I would have two worries if I were a Celtics fan. The obvious one is that Robert Williams isn't there. He's a defensive anchor. He's very important. Bruce Brown has already given us a glimpse into how the Nets plan to beat them by going into the paint. But the second one is, and again, we can talk about this, but the idea of clutch points, and Tim McMahon, this is right up your alley. You're my stats guy. You know what I'm talking about. Clutch points, clutch moments.
Cojones factor.
Yeah, and they're right. The cones factor, and their numbers weren't great. Now we can say, okay, they weren't, but on the whole for the season, but since January, everything's changed. And there is some truth to that. They never should have signed Schroeder in the first place. And they had to get rid of him because the ball was sticking with him. It was about him getting his numbers, getting his next contract, not about what that team needed to do to make it be at their optimal best offensively. And Derek White, to me, was this really great unheralded pickup. I don't think people realize how great he's been for them. So if I'm the Celtics, I'm going to run, because we know the Nets have problems with their transition defense. But the idea that this is like a slam dunk for Boston is crazy to me. Like, has anybody been watching what Kyrie Irving's been doing? My goodness.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Nets' clutch struggles and the Gahonis factor. That I originated that term in a passionate defense of Kyrie Irving on one of my original podcast appearances, because everyone's like, you know, slamming Kyrie, analytics, this and that, defense, this and that, you know, Bond Temps was getting all nerdy. And I'm like, this is right after the dude hit a game winner on Christmas against the team, the Warriors team, that he hit a game seven winning shot. So if it's close down the stretch, I mean, KD and Kyrie, not just two of the great shot makers of this era, but two of the great clutch shot makers. Having said all that, the Nets have to guard for the first 45, 46, 47 minutes of games. And I'm not convinced they can do that well enough to beat the Celtics four times out of seven. And look, KD and Kyrie, they're going to get their buckets. They're good, but the Celtics are not, you know, it's not going to be easy for those guys. They're going to have to work for their points. You know, the Williams absence is significant, but the Celtics have been a much better team over the course of the season.
Great.
Yeah, I think that's really where it comes down to for me, McMahon. The Celtics are just a much better team than the Nets. Even in these recent days when the Nets had to win some of these games to get in a 7-8 matchup, yeah, they won, but they needed to play Kyrie 40-something minutes to beat Houston, a team that's not trying. They both, him and Kevin Durant, had to play the entire second half to beat the Knicks and come back from down 21 at MSG. They struggled to beat a injury-depleted and, frankly, not that good at this point Cavaliers team twice. They gave up 120 or 30 points to the Indiana Pacers. Like, this is a team that has never really played to the level that people put it to. And they also have been a 500 or worse team in games Kyrie has played this season. And those games have pretty much all come with either James Harden or Kevin Durant on the court with him.
Yeah, so, slight difference between Kevin Durant and this season's James Harden.
Well, you can say that, but it's still, Harden's still been an all-star level player this year. It's not like he was out there with, you know, the end of the bench guys in those
games. But KD's an MVP level player.
Of course.
I mean, there's a drastic drop off there.
There is, but they haven't been lighting the world on fire anyway. And I think your point about the way the Celtics and Nets line up in this series, I think is really the thing that people forget about, in that if you look at the way this is matched up, the Celtics have probably the best players in the league to guard Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. You've got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Derek White and Marcus Smart. You can all throw at Durant at different times. And then you've got Derek White and Marcus Smart, who you can both put on Kyrie basically for 48 minutes a game. And those two guys are going to have to work for every single point they get the entire game. There's going to be no easy baskets, going to be no easy points. And the Nets have not exactly proven to be a team, like you both have said, that's going to guard for 48 minutes. It's going to play hard for 48 minutes. Their effort fluctuates up and down. They just don't have the defenders to actually guard anybody, really. So I do, Jackie, actually think the Celtics should be pretty clear favorites in this series. I do think they should win the series fairly comfortably. And Kevin Durant is an unbelievable player, and I certainly wouldn't be excited about seeing him on the other side, but you know, there's also the fact that we're not sure exactly who would have been eligible to play in Toronto, which may have factored into Boston's thinking in that series. But beyond that, to me, if I'm the Celtics and I think I have a realistic chance to win a championship, or at least some chance to win a championship, to me, the only way they were going to do that is if they got home court against Milwaukee. And so that's why I understand why somebody would say, hey, don't take on the Nets in the first round. But to me, their only chance of beating Milwaukee, barring injury, was having a home court in the game seven. And so why they went for that second seed to get that potential home court in the second round. Because to me, that's the one way I could see them having a real path to get into the final.
Let me throw this in. So I got told within the last 24 hours that the target for Ben Simmons is game 4, 5, or 6. Now, I couldn't believe that, because the guy hasn't played in 11 months and isn't even doing 5-on-5. Every time I checked on Ben Simmons for the last 6 to 8 weeks, it was week to week, not close, you know, still a ways to go. And so when I heard this hard pivot towards optimism and like the word game 4 came out of the mouth, I was like, and then Durant said today he's not expecting to play. Nash hedged and said maybe he plays, maybe he doesn't, you know, and I don't know. He's got to go through ramp up, but Let's say he does play. And by the way, this is a first round spread out series. We're recording this on Thursday. Game five isn't for like 11 days or something like that. So it's not like he'd be playing in like, a few days. Do you think if Ben Simmons played 12, three, 4 minute stretches, Jackie, that it would make a potential difference? Could that be like a mid-series curveball?
Listen, I'm a fan of what Ben Simmons can do, but I will say this. He's a unique talent. He's not a plug him in and go kind of talent. When he's at his best, he's got the ball in his hands and he's going downhill in the open floor. That's when Ben Simmons is so, so scary. He's a great defensive player, but with a back that's been a little cranky and you haven't played in a whole year, how much are you going to ask from him? This makes no sense to me. It just doesn't. If you had a healthy Ben Simmons, would everybody feel differently about this series? Maybe, but it's late. And again, he's not a guy. I mean, Durant has never played with him. Kyrie has never played with him. And Kyrie, we've all seen, he gets exasperated if guys are in his way or in the wrong spot or aren't. And, I don't know.
Just foul him. Why wouldn't you just hack him?
Yeah, it's a possession. It's anytime he's out there with those guys, it's a possession they're not shooting, right? I mean, it's hard to argue that. I mean, it's just hard to see.
He does other things, but he does other things. I mean,
no, he does for sure. But I'm just saying, like to Brian's point, if you foul Ben every time, like that's a time that Kevin or Kyrie isn't shooting the ball. Like you're probably going to be in better shape that way, you know?
And I just don't know, like you throw Ben Simmons in the middle of a series where like, will he have even any practice time with these guys? It's not like teams are practicing hard during the playoffs. It's not like they're going to be scrimmaging in practice.
Right.
I don't know is that a wrench in the works or is that like a bonus? I don't know. Totally new role for him. Like if this is, NBA 2K and, you don't have to worry about all that stuff, great, but it's not. And, how does he fit? You can come up with this world where, you plug him right into that Bruce Brown role. He's perfect. He's never done that. That's like right. you can see that if he has a training camp or a lot of practice time or some, a few weeks of regular season play. To ask him to do that midway through a playoff series, I mean –
Or to just throw him out there and have him guard Jason Tatum and be like, oh, yeah, try to slow down Jason Tatum, who's on an absolute nuclear tear, right? Like, it's not like he's had one half-assed practice all season. He hasn't played in a year. Right. Like, I just
– We all know the speed of the game, right? We all know the speed of the game. True.
The Low Post podcast brings you some of the best insights into the world of the NBA, hosted by NBA insider Zach Lowe. Playoffs are here and Lowe will be there. With what you need to know, listen to The Low Post wherever you find your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. So injuries are going to play a big role in this first round. They always do in the playoffs. And McMahon, down there in Dallas, this is potentially something that could change the whole playoffs. I mean,
maybe Luka shouldn't have had that technical rescinded, huh?
Yeah, Tony Brothers is trying to help him out.
So Luka, calf strain, tell me what the outlook is there. Because Vegas, let me just say this, Vegas thinks the Jazz are winning the series. They think Luka is knocked down. The Jazz are the favored team without home court with a lower seed.
And healthy Luka, I would have picked the Mavericks. I picked Jazz in six. So I think that kind of tells you where I'm thinking. And, you know, the question is not, hey, is Luka going to be ready for game one? It's, will he be able to play in the series?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You made a great point, McMahon, the other day about Rudy. I think it'd be good to for listeners to get a sense of, like, how
right.
long
so Rudy
be.
Rudy Gobert, with a mild calf strain in the middle of the season, ended up missing 3 weeks. Went 3 weeks between that strain and when he played in the game again. And he was out about a week longer than he anticipated. You know, I don't know if that was them being very cautious. And so, you know, maybe in a playoff situation, he would have come back, you know, a few days earlier or even a week earlier. But if Luka is out 2 weeks, which Jeff Stotts at N Street Clothes on Twitter does the best job of anybody tracking NBA injuries, he says the average time out from a calf strain is 16 days. So let's call it 2 weeks. Even trim a little bit off that. If this is 2 weeks from the time Luka was injured to the time he's back, he's missing four games of this series.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so, and listen, the Jazz, we've talked a lot. The Jazz were in a tailspin. The Jazz, they've got a lot of issues, a lot of funkiness going on. If the Mavericks were able to hang in there, say they get Luka back, you know, hypothetically for game four, if they're able to get one of those first three games, I still think they've got a pretty good shot of winning the series if he can come back and be himself. But we just don't know. But the idea of him playing, frankly, either of the first two games would be absolutely shocking and, frankly, dangerous. And so the Mavericks are essentially saying as little as possible. You know,
I saw Jason Kidd today. It was like pulling teeth to get him to say Luka's name.
Well, Luka, we've gotten he's been in good spirits, according to Jason Kidd, every single day. But Luka, he hadn't done anything on court all week. He did a little bit on the treadmill today. You know, he is working in the back. Obviously, it's pretty much around the clock rehab and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, again, the idea of him playing in the first two games is just, that's not realistic. The one thing that Kidd has said this week that I kind of took note of was just more than it. I mean, Kidd pretended great. Oh, I don't know the difference. You know, come on, that kind of stuff. But he did say that they aren't going to put Luka out there if he puts himself in jeopardy in terms of making this worse, because we have all seen what can happen if you return, you know, too quickly from a calf strain.
Yeah, it's a scary injury for sure.
The one,
I mean, they claim that the Durant thing wasn't related.
Okay.
But sure. I'm not a doctor, but I don't know. I mean, how could it not be?
Well, the one little sliver of good news with this thing is the strain is higher up in the calf. It's not down toward in the area where, you know, it's directly impacting the Achilles, but still it's a strain by definition is a tear of the muscle. You know, they're doing everything they can, but at a certain point, you can't speed up the healing process and you can't throw a guy, especially a guy, his game. People don't think of him as being explosive, but dude, he is a stop and start, you know, pushing off on that thing, slamming the brakes on. Like, you just can't put him out there before he's ready. And honestly, their challenge early in the series, other than trying to win without him, might be convincing him to be patient, because playing him in this series, even if they lose the series, it's not worth jeopardizing an injury that could really impact his career. And so Jay Kidd said they're not going to put him out there if he's in position jeopardizing, making it worse. And he even brought up Dirk in 2003. Well, if you remember 2003 Western Conference Finals, against the Spurs, Dirk had a knee issue, yep, and they ended up holding him out for that series. Now, what Kidd didn't mention is Cuban was pushing for Dirk to play. Nelly's the one who held him out and ended up being a big part of their falling out. But point being, Luka's future is way too valuable to jeopardize that during a first-round series, and obviously would be a significant achievement and step for the Mavericks to get out of this round, but it's not like they're Western Conference favorites or anything. I mean, let's be honest, healthy Luka or not.
They're not the favorites, but they are dangerous. They're dangerous.
Dangerous, but what kind of healthy Luka, what kind of chance do you give them of getting to the West Finals, getting past the Suns the next round?
I thought they had the best chance of beating the Suns of anybody in the West until Sunday afternoon. So, I mean, I thought they had a real shot. But to your point, McMahon, you go back to that Dirk series and you go back to 2000 when Greg Popovich sat Tim Duncan out, right, mm-hmm. with the same kind of knee thing. Like, he could have come back and played. And he was mad about it at the time, but they were like, look, you're going to play for decades. Like, we need to make sure you're healthy. And with a calf injury, like, just like you said, even if you're just talking about this year's playoffs, if Luka comes back a couple days, you know, a game or two earlier than maybe he should, and then he hurts it again 6 minutes into the game and is just done, well, then they have no chance of making a run anyway. So, you know, there's no point in putting him in a situation where you have a risk of even just re-injuring it and he can't play for another month. So,
and with an injury like this, it's not only, you know, do you like, hey, you come back, you hurt yourself, we're done for the playoffs regardless. That really complicates this summer going into next season. You can screw up next season trying to rush him back. And so, again, the Mavericks, they aren't – what I anticipate happening is Luka really pushing to come back ASAP and the Mavericks – you know, taking umbrage with the P part of that as soon as possible. And it's not possible if, you know, if that muscle hasn't healed.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think since they traded Kristaps Porzingis, to me, this is the new Mavericks, right? They've reset their clock. They've reset their time clock. They've reset everything. So would I sacrifice this first round series this year to then go forward with the guy we think who's our coach and with a team that we think we can build on going forward? That to me is a no-brainer.
Yeah. And you know what? They actually, I think, have a significantly better chance of surviving if it's a brief Luka absence, if it's a 3-game, even 4-game deal, they have a better chance of surviving that and being able to still win this series because of that trade. Because if they hadn't made that trade, then it's all on Jalen Brunson. Now they've at least got Dinwiddie, who, let's be honest, has blown away all of our expectations for what he could be with the Mavericks. Dinwiddie at least, I think, gives them a chance to compete in a way that wouldn't have been possible if they hadn't made that deal.
Cojones factor, Tim. Cojones factor.
Hey, listen, Dinwiddie, these guys, the bronze medalist for Cojones factor player of the month last month. These guys got on me, but it's the truth.
I believe it.
He should get the brass award. Forget the bronze. The brass. speaking of series, I think are going to be really interesting. And by the way, the Mavericks getting the first two games at home. If they get a split there, it would go a long way.
Yep.
Bontemps, the series you mentioned you're covering. I'm going to Phoenix. I'm going to do Phoenix, whomever they play, Clippers or Pelicans. But I got a red line around Philly, Toronto. I know that Toronto technically is the sixth seed. I'm sorry, the five seed. Yeah. But let's be honest, they are not playing like the five seed, nor is Philly playing like the four seed. This is inverted. You know, if not in home court, it's inverted in the way they've been playing. James Harden, the reason that they pushed to make this trade before the summer when they could have waited was because they wanted to get this playoff run in with James Harden. And the expectation was that he and Joel would be able to be on some sort of rhythm at this point. But that hasn't happened. That hasn't happened at all. And Matisse Thybulle is not going to be able to play in the games in Toronto. So,
yep.
Where are you at right now looking at this thing?
I think this is going to be the best series of the first round, and I have no clue how it's going to go because Joel Embiid is by far the best player in the series. And in keeping with typically how playoff series go, if you have clearly the best player, you're probably going to win. And so I'm leaning towards picking Sixers in seven, though the idea of the Sixers playing a game seven here in Philly, like who the hell knows how that would go. But you look at everything else that's in this series, you know, I think you'd take Nick Nurse over Doc Rivers to make adjustments throughout the course of a 7-game series. You're not going to have Matisse Thybulle, one of the few athletes on this Philly team. Their only good perimeter defender really at this point. You know, maybe you could say Danny Green, but he's lost a step by now. So you're not going to have him in the games in Toronto because he's not vaccinated. And certainly by his comments, it does not seem like that's something that's going to be happening anytime soon. so you can rule him out for the series. And Toronto has a bunch of long freak athletes who they can throw at James Harden and make his life really difficult. Philly just lost the other day in Toronto. James Harden, I believe, was 3-for-12 or 3-for-13 in that game. Fred VanVleet didn't even play in the game. It's going to be fascinating to see how this goes, because there's going to be a ton of pressure and a ton of expectations here. I mean, you mentioned that trade, Brian. They go get Philly goes and gets James Harden, and they sat up on the dais, him and Josh Harris and Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers, and they talked about being a championship caliber team, and championship expectations were here. And look, Philly got the draw it preferred. They stay away from Brooklyn, they stay away from Boston, they stay away from Milwaukee. They have to beat Toronto and Miami to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. If you told them 2 months ago you're going to get to play Toronto and then Miami to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, they would have been like, all right, sign me up for that. I keep away from these elite teams in the East.
They just don't want to see Trae Young in the second round. They've seen that and been there, done that.
Well, I was just going to say, McMahon, go back to last year, right? This was on their racket. They were the one seed. They had get Washington in the first round, and then they get the winner of Knicks Hawks. And you're thinking, man, the Sixers are going to walk to the conference finals. They're finally going to break through. And then what happens? We know what happens. They have to fall apart in game 7. Ben doesn't make the shit, doesn't take the dunk. Everything goes to hell. And now we're here where we are now. So that's a long-winded way of saying I slightly lean towards Philly. I think Joel will probably get this done, but man, this has got a chance to go a lot of different directions. And to me, there's a ton of pressure on Joel and James Harden and Doc Rivers, because if they don't win this series for different reasons, it's going to come down on all three of those guys. And then there'll be a lot of ramifications from that.
Is there pressure on James Harden? He's getting the $200 million.
Well, yes. James today again said there's no pressure on me. I'm just ready to go out and move.
Okay.
McMahon, hold on. I'm not saying he doesn't want to win. Of course he wants to win. Why would there show me the consequence of James Harden not delivering? 3 years ago, I would say that series I covered between Houston and Golden State, where Golden State won after Durant got hurt and they were coming, they celebrated like they won a title that night in Houston and were running down the hallway saying, bleep Chris Paul. And they're all the, and Harden just blamed Chris Paul. And they were like, yeah, you're right. We'll get him out of here. Then he that's the quits consequence. On two
he can't blame somebody else. He can't blame somebody else.
Yeah, what I would say.
What's the consequence that they're not going to give him $250?
What?
They're giving him the $250 either way.
I would.
How do you know? What if he bombs? What if he bombs in this first round series?
Then Doc probably takes the fall.
Then you turn around and give James Harden all that money.
Daryl Morey does.
Jackie, if I was watching James Harden right now and he was in the middle of a $250 million contract, I'd be like, oh my gosh.
Exactly.
We got problems.
Listen,
forget the fact that the beginning, and they're going to give it to him, Jackie. They have to.
Listen, Bobby Marks said the day they made the trade, when he signs that contract, it will be the worst contract in NBA history. And Daryl Morey, not far from where I used to live in Boston, Jackie, sat on the stage wearing a James Harden shirt or a shirt with James Harden's face on it and said, I've been reunited with my basketball Jesus. And I think the expectation has to be that he's going to get re-signed and be here in Philly. When I say there's going to be pressure and consequences, what I'm talking about is with the people here in Philadelphia. As we all know, this is not the easiest place to play for a variety of reasons. And if they lose this series, there's already people here who are starting to go, I don't know about this James Harden thing. This isn't looking like it's going great. If they lose to Toronto in the first round of the playoffs and James Harden doesn't play well, whether they re-sign him or not, there's going to be a lot of people here going, what the hell are we doing? And it's going to be, everything is going to get ratcheted up. And yes, they'll probably move on from the coach. They'll bring in a new coach. Like Tim said, they'll shift things around, but you've got to focus on that. And the other thing is too, Joel Embiid is just signed the Supermax, but this guy is going to be looking around. And if this thing starts to go sideways, even if they bring James Harden back, there's going to be more noise about what happens with his future too. So,
or especially if.
Right. Especially if. Yes.
I mean, we've talked about the shelf life of James Harden and co-stars, but what's at risk for James Harden? His reputation.
Yeah.
I don't think he cares.
Which is already on the edge of the cliff anyway, when it comes to big games.
Yeah.
Big moments. So
let him go 2-for-11 in a first round flame out elimination.
I mean, Zach has said a bunch of times.
He'll go to Fashion Week and say, let me know when I got to come back to sign the 250.
I mean, look, as Zach has said a bunch of times, what is James Harden's postseason moment? He doesn't really have one, right? You got to go back.
The block on Lou Dort in the first round game.
His postseason moment is trade me and sign my contract extension.
Right.
Which is what's been happening routinely the last
few years. Can I just say one thing? This is a funny thing to me about the NBA, and everyone forgets about matchups. If the Toronto Raptors beat the 76ers, to me, that's not even a big upset.
No, I agree. I mean,
Pascal Siakam might be like the best player in the league no one's talking about right now. He's had an unbelievable turnaround. Talk about a guy whose reputation was hanging in the balance. This dude, he, in my mind, of course, I don't vote anymore because I'm semi-retired. So I can't believe why I'm on with you guys still. But here we go.
I promise you, when I'm retired, I am not talking to
you. She sounds retired, doesn't she? She doesn't know what's going on in the league at all.
Nothing.
She
knows. Well, no idea.
I certainly hope to be at some point. But anyway, my point would be that if I had to do an All-NBA team this year, which gratefully and thankfully I do not, because I'm tired of agents calling me at 2 a.m. when I don't pick their player. you could make a really good case for Siakam, but no one's talking about him because it's Toronto and they, and so if the Sixers lost to the Raptors, I wouldn't be like, what a shock. That's egregious. I'd be like, yeah, that team's just playing better right now. And they have some pretty good guys that know how to close out games, and another tough luck thing for Embiid. But I mean, all of us who've been watching Harden, it's not hindsight. It wasn't hindsight when we were all saying, what are you doing? Do not make this deal. That's hindsight.
Totally, totally, totally true. And the one thing I didn't mention that I think could end up being the total X factor in the whole series is the health of Fred VanVleet. He was fantastic through the All-Star break. He was shooting 40% from three. He shot 29% from three after the break. He's been dealing with some knee issues. He's gotten a bunch of time off. He says he feels a lot better. But to me, that's sort of the key. If he's playing
Ananobi hasn't been healthy.
OG's missed a ton of time too. Like, they've barely had their full team. But if Fred VanVleet is healthy, and like you said, Jackie, Pascal ended up being the last guy I left off of my NBA ballot. It basically came down to one of him, DeMar or LeBron, and he was the one who got left off. But if you
a pox on you, Bontemps, a pox on you.
There'll certainly be a pox on me in Toronto, because anytime you don't vote for any of their players, it's the end of the world. But not the Raptors. The fans there are crazy. But
go ahead.
No, I was going to say was if you have Fred and Pascal rolling, then I think Toronto could score enough to potentially win the series. If Fred is compromised and is still shooting 29% from three,
they have trouble.
It's just going to be hard for them, I think, to score. Although the way they do get out in the break and run and create turnovers and get out in transition, there's probably no better team for them to play than a James Harden and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, and they frustrate players. Like, is there ever a team that frustrates players more than the Toronto Raptors? And a frustrated James Harden is a sight to behold, let me tell you. I mean, one of the moments I will never forget, and I was in the stands with my family watching the Rockets play the Celtics, and the Rockets are going to win the game. And Marcus Smart, were you at that game, Tim? Completely go to James Harden into not one, but two turnovers in the finals. I mean, I've never seen anything like it since.
Yeah, I wasn't at that game, but it was a class. I mean, it was an all-time Marcus Smart thing where he was
agonizing. I was like,
and flopping. And...
Right. I'm like, I was like, did this just happen? Did I really see this?
Well, we have to go, but I just want to say this. The stage is set for Embiid. Forget about Harden. Forget about Thibault. Forget about Scotty Barnes. Forget about Fred VanVleet. The stage is set here for Joel Embiid to do something remarkable in this series. And I know the votes have been in, and that what he does in this series can't be, some of us will feel differently about it, but others of us who believe greatly in Joel Embiid will feel.
All right. So tell me, who did you guys vote for? Did you already do this? Let me hear your.
We're doing it on another part of the pod. I voted for Embiid. I don't think that's a surprise.
I'm not allowed to vote.
I voted for Giannis.
Wait, why aren't you not allowed to vote? Because you're banned.
He just doesn't have a vote.
You got it. Yeah, I'm banned.
All right. Well, we'll talk about.
I would have voted for Jokic. I don't see how the man had a historic year. Sorry.
All of you are totally fine.
Love, 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 love.
I'm just saying.
Personally and professionally. And Giannis, by the way. But.
And those are all willing. This is a moment for Embiid. And if he delivers on this moment, it could be a statement moment in his career. That's all.
If he gets out of the first round,
he could
round,
have that moment and still lose. He could still have this moment you're talking about and lose.
That's true. That's true. We'll see. Jackie, thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Great to see you. Years. Thanks for coming on. No, it's got to be sooner than that, please. McMahon, Bontemps, thank you. Jackson Agello, our producer. I've got to go. So sorry. We will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.